Our scripture lesson for this morning comes from the book of Romans, chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Well, school started this week, and as I said, I ended, which was awesome. But I remembered back in the day, you know, when I was going to school, there was always that time, you know, right in the first week of school where you would have to write a theme about what you did this summer. What did I do this summer? Remember doing that? And I learned later on that teachers do that just to get you used to using a pencil again. Because most of the time, when I was a kid at least, we didn't pick up a pencil all summer. And we had to remember how to form letters and sentences and words and things like that. So we did that theme and we'd write about what we did and where we went. And you all probably had some great things that you did this summer. And we did too. Had a chance to go on the mission trip with the senior high youth, which was awesome. And then had a chance to go on vacation for a week back in Gettysburg and tooling around there for a little bit. And then went to Asbury for my doctoral program. And, you know, that's not exactly vacation, though, I have to tell you. That last month, we took two courses, and I finally come to the end of the coursework portion of my doctoral program. And there is much rejoicing. But we got to that point, and realizing that there's still a little bit left to go, we are taking a trip to Kenya in May that they are sponsoring for us. We'll be doing some preaching in some African churches over the course of 10 days, which should be a really exciting experience. And I still have to finish my dissertation, which I'm doing the project right now. The title of my dissertation is The New Pastor: Tasks, Hygiene Factors, and the Break-Even Point for Clergy Transitions. I know you're all going to want to run out and grab a copy as soon as you can. It's very exciting. But for all intents and purposes, the school part of school is over. And getting a doctorate means that you've done about everything you can do school-wise. I find it ironic that it's the same week, you know, that my kids are beginning and I'm ending. And some of these little ones are starting school for the first time. And it's exciting to see that. Well, this scholarship has been a real blessing. The scholarship was given by a man named Ralph Waldo Beeson, who was an insurance executive, a very faithful Methodist layperson. And he grew up in the church, amassed quite a fortune, but also lived very frugally and saved his money. And when he was about to die, he gave this money to two different places, one to Beeson Seminary in Alabama, and one grant of $10 million to Asbury. And he gave it for the specific reason of training preachers who had some promise. See, Mr. Beeson had traveled around so much over the course of his life and gone to so many different churches that he realized that most preaching was awful, terrible. So he leaves his legacy for these seminaries to train preachers to please God be better. And that you take some preachers who have promise and you teach them well so that then they can go in turn preach others around them. You will have to determine whether or not Mr. Beeson's grant has been effective. Though if it has not, you won't have him to complain to because he died more than 20 years ago. But while the coursework and the dissertation process have been interesting, one of the cool parts of this program is that we've been able to visit different churches around the world and around our country. We went to South Korea a couple years ago and visited churches there in South Korea. Went to South Korea in February, which is not the optimal time to go. It is cold there. We went to visit churches in Houston in August, which was the opposite of cold. This past month, we went to several different churches. We went to a little Eastern Orthodox church, which I don't know if you've ever been to an Eastern Orthodox service, but it's not like anything you've ever seen or that you're used to. It went on for 2 hours. And the liturgy, you read through the whole liturgy, and the priest is doing things behind the screen called the iconostasis, and he goes back there and prays words, and then he comes out and he's swinging the incense, and it has bells on it, and smells and bells, as they call it, and he's swinging the incense around, and half of the service is in Greek, and half of it's in English, and there's sort of this, the choir sings constantly. They don't just do one number. They sing through the whole service, and at the same time, you've got families everywhere, and kids crawling around on the floor. It's this real, like, holy chaos. And because it was 2 hours long, some of the people didn't come until the second hour. They waited until, like, the critical moment of the service to walk in, and they sauntered in. We started with, like, 5. We ended with, like, 200. It was bizarre. It reminded me of the way people come to church 15 minutes early to skip the preliminaries. I don't know, none of you do that, but there it is. That certainly happened in Park City. We had people coming late all the time. It was fascinating. Then we went to some mega churches. And we think of a big church. I mean, by most standards, Tri-Lakes is a very large church. The average church size in America is about 35 people. Do you know that? 35 people. Compared to that, we are huge. Compared to some other churches, we are a Sunday school class. We went to a church in Louisville that has 20,000 on a weekend. Their parking lot holds 4,000 cars, and it's not enough, 4,000 cars. They have rooms. They have a separate building for the staff. Very cool. They have a separate building for the youth ministry, and for each grade of youth, they have a room set aside for each grade level that is bigger than our sanctuary. So imagine a whole building full of these kinds of rooms, all decorated and very cool, and they have video games on the walls and stuff like that. It's very, very interesting. But you go into worship, and we met the pastor a little bit before the service as he was standing there with his bodyguard. Yes, if you have a 20,000 attendance church, you apparently need a bodyguard. Sometimes I feel like I need one with 500, but he had a bodyguard there with him. And what was cool about this church, though, was that it was huge. They had 3 decks, and then they had jumbotrons. You know, like you see at the NBA games. If you go to the arena, jumbotrons. And we were watching these jumbotrons and noticing that the people sitting in the front row, and the pastor is standing right here, the people are not looking at the pastor in front of them. They are looking at his picture on the jumbotron, which caused one of my colleagues to lean over to me and said, you know, he said, if I had jumbotrons like that, he said, I'd get introduced every week like they do in the NBA. You know, at 6'2", 195 pounds out of Asbury Theological Seminary, Pastor John Smith. High fives, everybody coming in, you know. That was awesome. Really cool. So we'll put that in the budget for next year. But I heard a lot of sermons too. I mean, we heard sermons at these little churches. I went to another church that was a little United Methodist church that had 20 people in it. And they knew you were a visitor. Because when you walked in, they glommed onto you. Oh, please, God, stay. 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 We need you. We need you badly. I said, but I don't live here. I live in Colorado. Oh, I'm so sad. You know, it was just like from there to here. And then we went to the monastery for 2 days where we had to be silent for 2 days. I know that was not easy, but we stayed silent for 2 days and worshiped 7 times a day with the monks. The first service is at 3:15 a.m. So we saw all these different experiences. And at the end of it, someone asked us, what was your favorite church out of this whole experience? And when they came to me, I said very clearly, there was one church that stood out above the others. I said, the church that I left to come here. Everywhere I went, I thought to myself, this is very cool. But I'm thankful to be where I am. I'm thankful to be in this community of faith and to represent, and I couldn't wait to get home, be with my family and be with my church family and be back at worship together. Come home excited about where God is leading us as a church, as I'm away and as I'm thinking, as I'm looking, as I'm thinking, and as I'm listening in silence at the Abbey for a couple of days, God started to work on me a little bit and gave me some ideas about some things that we ought to look at going forward together, some ways in which our worship and our life together can grow even more deeply as we seek to serve Jesus Christ. You know, I think our church is uniquely positioned in this community. There are 500 churches in El Paso County. And in most places, you try to compete with other churches. You know, you swap sheep between churches. People go from one to the other. It's sort of that consumer mentality. You know, I like the big, or I like the small, or I like this, or I like that. All that's fine. But in reality, my view is that most churches should do one thing really, really well. I call it the Chipotle ministry principle. How many of you like Chipotle burritos? I love Chipotle burritos. But you notice something about Chipotle? It's very good. It's very high quality. But you notice when you go to Chipotle burritos, they only do one thing. They do burritos. Now, you could do a burrito with or without the tortilla, but it's still a burrito. They do one thing. There's no happy meal. There's no dessert. There's no none of that stuff. It's just burritos. And people think, how boring is that? But you want to go back all the time because it's so good. They're so good at what they do. And I really believe that in a community with 500 churches where the menu is so big, our task is really to find that one thing that we do really, really well and focus on that. And then when people come to visit us, they'll want to come back. They'll want to come back because there's a spirit of God here. There's a worship here that is alive and vibrant, and that we're growing as people who are growing into the image of Christ. That's what we're really about. That's what we've always been about as Methodists. So I'm excited about where God's going to lead us. And I think there was one period of time where I really thought about this. We were in my preaching class where we listened to 18 sermons over 2 days. I feel your pain. But you only have to do one. We listen to 18 in a row, one right after the other, every hour for 2 days. And all in Romans, which is not the easiest book in the Bible to preach on or listen to. But there was two verses that jumped out at me as we went over this again and again. Romans 12, 1 and 2, which Jen read for you. Paul says, present your bodies as a living sacrifice. Don't be conformed to this world, but be renewed in your minds. Paul writes this letter to a house church in Rome that is divided between a Gentile majority and a Jewish minority. Each of these had come to Christ, but they were still holding on to a lot of their old categories. So they're in conflict with each other over what it means to be the church. In the first half of the letter, Paul challenges their division and provides a theological basis for their unity. He says, look, you're all one body because of Jesus Christ. You're all part of the same family. The family of Abraham, the family of Israel, the family that is made possible through Jesus Christ. You're all part of that family. You're all God's children. And that new family is called the church. Paul says this new community called the church has to continually be formed in such a way that it reflects God's mission and God's kingdom. And so therefore the church has two priorities. First, Paul says, we worship. We present our bodies as living sacrifices, holy and acceptable to God. This, Paul says, is your spiritual worship. Now, notice the dichotomy here. He says, present your bodies as a living sacrifice. This is your spiritual worship. Now, most of the time, because we're Western, influenced by the Greco-Roman world, we think of body and spirit as being two different things. But Paul was thoroughly Jewish. And in the Jewish understanding, those things are intimately connected. That's the biblical understanding. So what we do with our bodies affects our souls, and what we do with our souls affects our bodies, and vice versa. They're inexorably linked to one another. We were created then and embodied for the worship of God and to reflect God's image in our whole bodies. Another word we use for worship is liturgy, which is actually a Greek word that means public service or work of the people. So worship for us is our work. What we love, we worship. What we worship, we serve. And what we serve, we become. So worship is not just something we sit and receive, hoping that it touches our individual souls. It's a collective process. It's a shaping process that God wants to do with us. We present ourselves at worship so that we can be transformed into the image of God, because God is present with us. One of the books that I read this past month that really got me thinking was a book by James K.A. Smith, a book called Desiring the Kingdom. And in that book, he says that there are all kinds of liturgies out there. Everybody worships something. Or as Bob Dylan said, remember when Bob Dylan was a Christian for about 20 minutes back in the 80s? He cut a couple of Christian albums, and one of which was a song that got a little bit of radio airplay. You got to serve somebody. It may be the devil, it may be the Lord, but you've got to have to serve somebody. Bob Dylan. Okay. You got to have to serve somebody. And what Smith says is that our liturgies cause us to serve different places. So, for example, he says there is a liturgy of advertising. Advertising is a liturgy. The liturgy of consumerism. That there are symbols and signs everywhere that want to turn us into consumers. There are rituals that do that. Every time we turn on a commercial, it's giving us an opportunity. It's inviting us into consumerism. Each liturgy has its own particular symbols, and when we worship only things, as advertising wants us to do, then we begin to love things more than anything else. Another one he talks about is the liturgy of the stadium. Yeah. Now think about this. I love football. Coach, I love football, you know, and we love to go to the game, and we cheer, and we do all that kind of stuff. And but if you thought about it, the liturgy of the stadium is the liturgy of competition. And sometimes we go too far with that liturgy. I mean, you know, the Steelers lose the Super Bowl. I'm depressed for a week, maybe more. I'm still getting over it, you know? But there's that process that says, what are we shaping into? Is this a primary liturgy? For many people, it is the primary liturgy. Where are they on Sunday morning? Football. Sports. What is the liturgy that shapes us? If you think about it, football is really a lot like church. I mean, you've got your call to worship, you know, the PA announcer. You've got your opening hymn. You've got the national anthem. You've got your time of greeting, where the players come out on the field and they shake hands with one another. Peace of Christ be with you. I don't think that's what they're saying, but they share that with each other, right? And you've got hymns going on throughout, you know, like the fight song or Sweet Caroline, bop, bop, bop. You know, that's the whole shared experience kind of thing. You've got the liturgy of the table at the concession stand. You know, you've got all that going on. And in a football game, just like in a worship service, everybody watches the clock to see when it's going to be over. It's been said that the church is a lot like a football stadium. There are 22 people needing rest who are being watched by 50,000 people who desperately need exercise, you know? It's a liturgy. It's a liturgy that, if we don't put it in perspective, forms us into people who may want to be winners at all costs. There are lots of different liturgies out there. There's the liturgy of the university, for example, which says that your degree determines your worth. There's the liturgy of addiction. There's the liturgy of the American dream, for example. The point is that everybody worships something. The question is, what is our worship forming us into? If we're Christians, true worship, no matter whether it's traditional worship or contemporary worship or worship at the monastery or whatever, is about shaping us into the image of God, blessing us with his presence so that we will be a blessing to the world. Worship of God is the liturgy that trumps all the others and puts them into their places. Worship is not about consumerism, where people come and say, well, gee, what did I get out of that? Soren Kierkegaard, the great philosopher, said that when we come to worship, the question should not be, how was it for you? But rather, how did we do? How did we do collectively engaging God? How did we do collectively in offering our worship to God? Did we leave this place transformed? Or as I heard one pastor say when the congregation was leaving, and people were saying, Pastor, that was a really great message. We really love that message. That was a great message. And the pastor just said to them, we'll see. We'll see. Did it form us? Did it shape us? Did it change us? Paul says that worship is so important that it should be a living sacrifice, an investment of the whole person and the whole community of faith. If we love God, if we love Christ, we will worship him. And if we worship him, we will serve him. And the more we serve him, the more we become like him. Worship that involves our whole bodies, engages our souls, allows us the opportunity to share together in community. That's worship that begins to form us as people. And it's not always about the words. That's one thing that came clear to me as I listened to 18 sermons in a row. We preachers tend to talk too much. And we don't often talk to each other. We need to provide space for that kind of thing to take place. When I was a kid, I didn't catch much of what was said in the service. I don't remember a single sermon my senior pastor preached when I was a kid. But I do remember him standing there, and I remember him holding up that Bible as though it was gold. And when he preached from it, he flapped it. I thought it would fly away one day. But he flapped that Bible, and I remember it very well. I remember my mom opening her Scofield Bible when the pastor opened his and looking at it. I remember the communion elements coming by and wanting so desperately to taste them and experience what everybody else was experiencing. The words of the hymns that I didn't understand at the time. Here I raise my Ebenezer. I don't know what that is, but I sang it anyway. Became part of who I was. And now those things come back to my mind over and over again. It shapes us. So I come home this year with a real conviction that our worship needs to be more than simply following an order in the bulletin. We work hard at that, but we need worship that is designed to shape us as people who love God and who are growing into his image. Worship that is less spectator and more participant, less words, more listening. Worship where prayer is not a rote recitation of lists, but a deeply connectional experience between God and each other. So as the ordained elder who's the leader of the church's worship, I feel a deeply renewed sense of energy around this. And one of my priorities for the coming year is to look at ways in which our worship can be more connective and embodied together. You know, we set things up so that there's an audience and there's a speaker and you receive and then you evaluate. We were graded in our sermons there. And we were getting grades from the professor and grades from our peers and things like that. And I thought, that's nothing. I get graded by 350 people every single week. But it's not about that. It's about shaping. It's about shaping and forming and being a community of worship. So we're going to try some experiments over the course of the next few months. And some experiments with our worship. Some things that involve us maybe moving around a little bit. Some high-touch kinds of things. And this is challenged by choice. You don't have to do this if you don't want to. But things like inviting people to come forward and be prayed for, to be anointed with oil for healing, maybe even have some candles here in the corner for us to light candles when we come to our prayer time as a living reminder of someone we're praying for who may be distant from us or someone who we lost and want to remember. Or maybe when we do communion, instead of just having the table up here and having everybody come up front like we always do it. But what would happen if we turned our chairs, for example, to face one another so we could see each other's faces when we come to the table? Would that freak you out? If it does, good. I think that's part of the process. You know, what would it be like for us to pray for one another in a more tangible way during the week? I don't know what that all looks like. But I think God is calling us to a different level of worship. I went to too much worship that was just a show. And when it was over, people bolted for the doors just like the movie credits had just rolled, right? They were gone. And one of the things I love about Trilex is that people don't leave right away. That's a little troubling when it's 1 o'clock and I gotta go. But I just lock the door and say, you lock it on your way out, right? That's who we are. So we may not do a whole lot, and you may be freaking out now a little bit and wondering why we send the pastor to school, because he always comes back with harebrained ideas. But there's an opportunity for us to really think about our liturgy, our liturgia, our worship in new and powerful ways. I love this tradition and the ways that we do that, and our Methodist tradition is so powerful and so rich with so many of these ways. We want to tap into that and bring some of those things forward. So I hope you'll be thinking about that. One of the things we want to do right away is we have a sermon series coming up in a couple weeks. We're starting it on the 11th of September on the Sermon on the Mount, which will be a 12-week series. We'll go through that all the way. And what I want to do with that, Joe and I usually sit down and work on our sermons, and we plan the series out, and we think, well, here's what the congregation probably needs, and here's what we're going to try to deliver, and we plan the series and so forth. But, you know, we never ask, hey, what does this mean for you? So what we want to do is we want to do a couple of evenings where we invite people to come and share with us what this text means to them or how they're dealing with it. So we invite you, for example, to read those three chapters in Matthew, the Sermon on the Mount, and then come one evening. We'll tell you when that is. And come one evening and say, here are the questions this raises for me. Here are the things I want to learn more about. Here's the stuff that troubles me about this. So that we can gather that input. And so when we bring that series to you, it's not just us, but it's the collective voice of our congregation coming together and bringing this worship and this message forward. That God's going to impact us in very powerful ways. Not just a one-way thing, but a dialogue with each other. Those are the kind of things we're thinking about. The second thing that Paul talks about in this two verses, he says, be transformed, do not conform to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. Notice, present your bodies as a living sacrifice, now be transformed by the renewing of your minds. Our brains are part of our bodies. In fact, they tend to govern everything. So if we're thinking, it tends to drive our behavior. If our worldview shifts, our behavior shifts with it. Our church's mission is threefold: to win people to Jesus Christ, nurture them to maturity and Christian faith, and equip them for ministry in the world. We started to think about what would be an intentional way for us to do that. I mean, how do you grow to maturity? You learn. You go to school. Not just the school that you go to every day and you do studies and all that kind of stuff, but also the school of hard knocks, right? But we wanted to provide an intentional pathway for people to grow deeper in their faith. Not just as a shotgun approach, but a way of saying, here's an intentional pathway to learning what it means to be a disciple. Because I think that is our one thing, to be a disciple-making church. And so we're offering these, go ahead and throw that up there, Joe. Three core areas that we're focusing on. Bible survey, which gives us the understanding of the Bible as a whole narrative, the whole story of what God is doing in the world. Our Wesleyan theological heritage, which reminds us that we're a unique people, not better than the Presbyterians or the Baptists or anything else, but just unique in that way. This is our thing. This is how we have traditionally understood it, and this is what drives our practice, is what John Wesley called practical divinity, that which is practical but also holy, those two things coming together. And then thirdly, spiritual disciplines and practices, those things that we need to do on a daily basis that help us grow deeper in the knowledge and love of God. So here's what we're going to ask you to do. We're going to ask you to start this fall by taking one class in one of these areas. And over the next 3 years, we want to encourage you to take classes in each of these three areas. And we're offering a whole bunch of them. You can see them out there in the great room. They're in the bulletin. They'll be in the newsletter and so forth. Some of you are saying, I've never taken a Bible study class before. I would encourage you to try it for the first time. You don't have to be an expert. We're not assuming that anyone's an expert. I'm not an expert. We're all growing and learning together. But we want to encourage you to start on this pathway because we believe there's steps that take us to growing more into the knowledge and love of God. So, worship and transformation by the renewing of our minds. These are the two things that I think are the key priorities for us in the coming year. Now, one of the things about being a living sacrifice is that it has the option of crawling off the altar. So, therefore, I would encourage you to give some credence to the experiment. We're not going to do radical big things. There won't be animal sacrifice. We're not going to hang things from the ceiling and, you know, smoke and no lasers and no jumbotrons, none of that kind of stuff. But just some simple stuff that helps us. Some of you are like, oh, dang, I wanted the jumbotron so badly. Maybe we'd get a better looking pastor up there. There'd be stuff like that. I was at one church, for example, where the person who was, you know, there was a voice and there was someone on the screen, but there was no one on the stage. They were piping in this person from another location. Disembodied worship. Wow. Works for some. You know, there's all different types, but I believe God's calling us into some new ways of thinking. So I want to encourage you to join us in the experiment and to jump in and see what God's going to do with this marvelous place. There is no better church that I'd rather serve than this one. And you have a spirit and a connection that is powerful. We can do great things for God in this Tri-Lakes area under the power of His Holy Spirit. Let's join that together. God, thank you for putting us in this place at this time, calling us together for your glory. May we serve you with all our hearts. In the name of Christ, amen.